This week on New York Now, outgoing SUNY Chairman H. Carl McCall talks about his remarkable career in politics and higher education.
You know, when I ran, the fact that no African American had held a statewide office, I held a statewide office. I think I performed well enough so people felt that, you know, why not? You know, I think that opened the door for others.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is off this week. Joining me at the desk, I'm happy to say, is a longtime Capitol reporter and familiar face to our viewers over the years, Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio.
Glad to be here.
We're going to start off with primary day on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Kind of a strange race to start with, but it was the Queens District Attorney race where an insurgent on the left, Tiffany Caban, won. Now, normally you might say, well, why is that a big story? But she was supported by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and some of the young and up-and-coming state senators here in Albany from Queens, Julia Salazar, Jessica Ramos. Caban defeated Melinda Katz, the Queens borough president, kind of part of that political machine.
That's right. The Democratic Party establishment. Katz was supported by Governor Andrew Cuomo. It was, you know, an upset victory. She won by only 1,000 votes. And we should mention there is a recount going on. Melinda Katz has not conceded yet, but it seems unlikely, even going through all the absentee ballots, that the outcome is going to change. And that, you know, for a second year in a row in Queens, counting Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez last year, the progressives have won over the Democratic establishment.
Katz supported also by Joe Crowley, who, of course, famously lost to AOC.
Yeah, I don't know. Was that the kiss of death? I mean, did they learn maybe that wasn't the best person?
So did the mainstream Democrats have a message
to get voters out? I mean, that sort of begs the question. When it happens 2 years in a row, it seems like more like a trend. Governor Cuomo called AOC's win a fluke.
Right.
And this year he said, well, it was because of low turnout, and then, you know, a minority of the electorate, you know, gets to decide the race. But that's the question is, if it was low turnout, why? What was the Queens Democratic machine doing, not picking their voters, getting them out to the polls? Why weren't they motivated to come on a random Tuesday in June like the insurgent supporters were?
Well, not only that, but low turnout usually helps the entrenched politician.
You know, that's a good point. I know. But in this case, it really didn't, because the ones that came out were really motivated and really angry. And, it certainly does seem like there's something going on in Queens.
All right, before we move on, we talked about how it's happened 2 years in a row. Do any of these politicians, say, in New York City and Queens and the Bronx specifically, maybe a Jeff Dinowitz in the Assembly or a Kathy Nolan, two folks who have been there for a long time, do politicians like these who have been there a while need to be worried about a primary next year?
Yeah, I think they do, and they are. And we're going to really have a convergence here, because the end of session is going to coincide just a few weeks before the June primary. And particularly in the Senate, some of the New York City Senate Democrats might get primaried. And how are they going to balance having to be more progressive when they have to save the seats of the Long Island Democrats? There's six Long Island Democrats plus Westchester plus Hudson Valley, and that's given the Senate Democrats a decisive majority. So if they lose Long Island, then they don't have their edge. So it's going to be really exciting next year to see how they thread that needle.
I want to go to a story that you did this week. You did a couple stories, actually, focusing on marijuana, one of them being how advocates are really trying to push some of these hesitant lawmakers about legalizing it in 2020.
Yeah, and going back to talking about the primaries, some of them could be primaried over this issue. So are they going to legalize adult recreational marijuana next year? I think the pressure is going to be on them to do it. And, you know, like I said, the New York City Democrats are going to feel like they have to. The Long Island Democrats are going to feel like they can't. But these advocates are really active, and I think it is going to influence, you know, a lot of what's going on. They're not just giving this up until 2021. They are definitely, even in the off session, going to try to rally people in these districts.
Before we get to the Democratic debates, we have to mention a story that broke this week that really shocked me, but apparently not a lot of the younger female reporters in Albany, and that's Bob Freeman, the longtime leader of the state's Committee on Open Government and a go-to person for so many journalists over the years. was fired for sexually inappropriate behavior. The Journal News broke the story. The Inspector General's office said Freeman had, quote, a series of sexually suggestive email messages with pornographic images on the computer during exchanges with another woman he may have met last year at Syracuse University. Again, this is according to the paper. Really, really shocking news.
Yeah, and it's sad to say it really shocked and appalled me too. I mean, he was a source for me, but not a particularly close one. I always found him, you know, polite, mm-hmm. but remote, and just had no idea that this was going on. It shows that, you know, you can know one side of a person, but not all sides of a person. And I think that's what we're learning more and more as the Me Too movement gets stronger and we hear more of these things. Mm-hmm. I think we've also learned that if there's one incident where somebody is harassing someone, you have to conclude that that's probably yeah. not the only incident. Right. And I think that's where the newspapers didn't know, because it was individual newspaper reporters. The woman talked to her editor. Sometimes they talked to Bob Freeman or his bosses, but they didn't really pick up, you know what, this is probably a pattern yeah. and it needs to be stopped. So yeah, it is shocking. I feel like not really anything has changed since I was a young woman, yeah. which was, you know, a long, long time ago, a generation ago, really. And you know, it's just kind of sad that hasn't changed. But, you know, the good thing is that they are speaking out now. And, you know, we need to know about this.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to the big national event this mm-hmm. week. A couple of the Democratic debates Wednesday and Thursday. Three New Yorkers, technically. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, junior U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, and Schenectady native Andrew Yang.
Oh, I was going to say, wait, who's the third? That's right, I almost forgot about him.
Yang only spoke, I think, for 3 minutes on Thursday, so he was obviously not a factor, not really polling. Kirsten Gillibrand, not really polling, mm-hmm. and it's the same for Bill de Blasio. Let's focus on de Blasio first.
Mm-hmm. First night.
I think he surprised a lot of people. Again, might have been low expectations, mm-hmm. but I think he surprised people with what he said. And he's coming from New York City, where he's talking to a lot of journalists a mm-hmm. lot of times, and yeah. he's got to get feisty. He seemed to do pretty well.
Yeah, well, he was the first one to start the trend of interrupting, yes. and he got his points in about income inequality and various progressive issues. And, you know, he certainly got himself noticed. It was interesting afterwards, MSNBC's Chris Matthews said, you know, Bill de Blasio did a great job. It was good that, you know, he was standing up for those things. But the women commentators were saying, boy, he was really annoying and irritating.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, coming from New York, covering New York politicians my whole life, I didn't find it that surprising that he was interrupting. But
no,
I guess maybe we're warped or something, because I think the rest of the country might think that behavior was a little too aggressive. He should have, you know, waited his turn and respected the moderators a little more.
Speaking of interrupting, Gillibrand did that a lot on Thursday.
She did,
but to be honest with you, that's how they have to be heard, honestly. Otherwise, they're not going to get called on like Andrew Yang, who spoke for 3 minutes.
And she was able to make her points as well, but I think that she got overshadowed by the exchange between Kamala
yes.
Harris and Joe Biden, where Kamala Harris very eloquently took down Joe Biden over the issue of school busing. So Gillibrand was able to talk about public corruption, public campaign financing, women's rights, but in the end, I don't think she's going to be remembered from that
right.
debate.
All right, time now for our New York Now poll question. Which New Yorker fared the best during this week's Democratic debates? New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, Kirsten Gillibrand, or we'll throw Andrew Yang in there as well, just
sure,
to be official.
Sure, why not? Yeah, he's from Schenectady, right?
Let us know, as always, at nynow.org. All right, let's reveal the results from last week's question when we asked, was it a successful legislative session in 2019? Our voters were pretty split on this one. Frank in Saratoga County voted no. Glad to see legalizing commercialization of women carrying surrogate babies was defeated. Uncalled for expansion of abortion rights, unfortunately, passed. Jenny in Larchmont, watching on WNET, elections matter. The newly Democratic-controlled legislature now reflects the actual population of New York and has done an amazing job in its first session of passing bills desired by the people, not a bundle of special interests and corporations.
And finally, Tom in Rochester, watching on WXXI, he was happy that the green light bill passed, saying that was big.
Thanks to everyone who voted. To do so this week, head to nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, links to Karen's radio stories, and our social media sites, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. And Karen, we'll shift gears now to the interview you had with Carl McCall, the longtime, a state controller, former
yes.
gubernatorial candidate, really a pioneer here in New York.
Yeah, he really has a long and storied career. But like anybody who's been around New York for a while, he also has a story about Donald Trump. Carl McCall, thanks for joining us.
Karen, thanks for having me. You and I have been doing this for a long time. It's nice to do it again.
Yeah, I know. I have to say it's an honor to do this in your, perhaps retirement, well, finally. We'll see about that.
It's real. It's real.
So I was looking at your resume, all the things that you've done, and I have to admit that some of the things that you did, I forgot that you even did. Controller, state senator, candidate for lieutenant governor, major party candidate for governor, but you're also UN ambassador, president of New York City Board of Education, ordained minister, all of these things. But what I wanted to start with is your upbringing. You are actually not a native New Yorker. People might be surprised.
That's right. I'm from Boston.
That's right.
It took me some time to lose my Boston accent, but I think I've done that.
Yeah, I think that you have. So in the Roxbury neighborhood, a family that was at times on what they called welfare in those days. How was that formative for you?
Well, it was formative in that it was a struggle. It was challenging. I was raised by my mother, who raised me and five sisters all by herself. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of, she couldn't do a lot for us in terms of physical things, but she imbued in us a sense of education and how important education was. And that was a constant thing with her. You've got to get a good education. If you can do that, you can then do anything. And me and my sisters really believed that. And I believed it, and I think that's what really transformed things for me. I got a good education in the Ivy League at Dartmouth College. It was completely free. I got scholarships. Mm-hmm. I did graduate work at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. So my mother was right. Education pays off.
And what about ambition? There had to been a little of ambition in there, too.
Well, that's true. There were things I wanted to do. My first ambition was to be a teacher. And I did that for a short time in Boston, but it was kind of a disappointing situation. I went to the Boston School Committee, and I said I'd like to teach. And Miss Fitzgerald, who was in charge of teacher placement, she literally jumped out of her seat when I walked in her office. She said, "You're just what I need for Jamaica Plain High School. You're big and you can keep order." And that was her view about what kids in a particular neighborhood needed, just somebody to keep order.
And not to actually teach them anything.
That's right, and not to understand their value, their worth, the fact that they were able to do whatever you could give them the opportunity to do. And so that's something that's carried me through and made it clear to me that I had to do something in education at the policy level, both at the Board of Education and now at the State University. To believe in students, get them to believe in themselves, and to support them and uplift them and make it clear to them that they could do whatever they wanted to do.
I'm going to skip around a lot here, but the State Senate, you were elected in 1975, just the post-Watergate elections. I'm wondering if that is similar to what we've seen this year going on with the newly energized Democratic State Senate and the State Assembly, a lot of new people. Was it that kind of feeling? Do you see a
same kind of feeling. There were a lot of new people who came in. I came to Albany with a fellow Senator Howard Nolan from Albany, Karen Burstein from Long Island, Carol Bellamy from New York City.
I remember
there were a number of young reform type people. And one of the things we did is we got here right away. There had been a long-standing person who had been the head of the Senate minority, a fellow named Zareski, a fellow named Franz Leichter, a senator from Upper Manhattan, defeated him. And we then selected Fred Orenstein, who was considered a very liberal, progressive person, to be the minority leader of the Senate. And that represented a real significant change here in Albany.
Yeah, and then something has kind of happened in between those times, right? Things got a little moribund there.
It did, but look how it's changed. I'm delighted to see all the new faces here, and look what they've done in a very short time. Just the other day, the way in which they protected the rights of tenants, that was very significant.
Yeah, big change.
Just last night, they passed the legislation to allow undocumented people to get a driver's license, which will be a big deal for people from an economic point of view. People can now have jobs that they weren't able to do in the past.
Yeah, it's been incredibly productive session compared to the last several of them. You're probably best known as being the state's controller.
Sure.
You replaced Ned Reagan. You were elected to that position. Were you the first African-American elected to a statewide office?
I was the first African-American elected to a statewide office. That happened in 1993. And remember the way I got elected, Ned Reagan, who had been the controller for about 25 years, he stepped down. Mm-hmm. And the contest was really within the legislature. And basically, the Democrats in the assembly had to select someone. And so I campaigned. I had been in the legislature, so I knew a lot of those mm-hmm. folks. At that time, also, I had worked at Citibank, so I had the financial background. And I was selected by the legislature, and then I was elected for two terms after that.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because you were elected on your own for almost three full terms.
That's true.
It seems like the controller's job, the main thing is to oversee the pension fund. But it seems like one of those jobs, it's kind of what you make of it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And I remember some of the things that you did in steering the pension funds. You divested in tobacco companies.
That's right. We did.
Mm-hmm. And South Africa, too, right?
That's right.
Back when you know they had the apartheid
and
everything.
We also supported the issues in Northern Ireland to make sure that there wasn't discrimination against Catholics in Northern Ireland. So we used the power of the pension fund, the fact that we invested and people depended on our investments, and we made sure that they were being responsible in terms of their activities as people who manage money for us.
Now, 2002, this is one of the years that was quite memorable for me and for you. You were the Democratic candidate for governor.
Sure.
You shored up a lot of support across the state, and then you got kind of a surprise primary challenge by Andrew Cuomo.
Well, it wasn't a surprise. I think Andrew had been planning to run just as I was planning to run.
It was a surprise to some people, I think.
Anyway, it was a very spirited race. I'm fortunate I won. In fact, I had considerable support, and when Andrew recognized that at the very end, he withdrew from the race.
Yeah, he dropped out
several days before, rather than to be defeated. But, you know, we overcame that. We now get along quite well. He appointed me as chairman of the board of the state university. I've been doing that now for 11 years, and we've had a very good relationship. He's been very supportive of higher education, which is so significant. Look, Karen, today, everybody needs a college education. It's not enough to have a high school diploma. You really have to have a college education. Most of the jobs that are being created are jobs that will require that education. And I'm so fortunate to be associated with SUNY because we provide quality, affordable higher education. And I'm delighted that I've been able to do that over the last 11 years.
Well, I notice we're steering away a little bit from Andrew Cuomo.
Okay, I just wanted to follow up.
He was a pretty disruptive force. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some said that he kind of harmed your candidacy going into the general election against, you know, incumbent governor George Pataki and maybe contributed to the fact that you didn't win that race. I mean, a lot of people would be bitter over that.
Yeah, well, you know, I probably was bitter at some point. I think that it was unfortunate that we had that primary, that I had to spend so much money on the primary. There wasn't any money left to take on George Pataki, who was there as an incumbent with $40 million.
Yeah.
But, you know, you overcome that, you move on and, try to find something else to do. See, I don't believe in failure. I believe that you might have some experiences that don't go as well as you'd like them, but you learn from that. And you build on it, and you come back, and you try to do things a little better based on the experiences that you've had.
You pretty much made your peace with Andrew Cuomo,
now. Yeah. And I think he's made his peace with me. It's a two-way street.
So we mentioned a little bit ago that you were UN ambassador appointed by President Jimmy Carter.
That's true.
And I was wondering if you wanted to, talk about what is going on. It's such a big topic, the UN right now, the current president, Donald Trump, foreign policy,
Karen,
I was going to say someone
saying. He doesn't have a foreign policy. He doesn't have a domestic policy. Look, I've known Donald Trump for a long time. You know, when I was controller, he was in the real estate business, and he came to us, and he wanted me to invest in his real estate projects, and I never did that.
You mean with the pension fund?
With the pension fund, yeah.
Uh-huh.
We looked at his projects, and we said, no, that's not where we wanted to put the money of our retirees, so we never invested. But Donald Trump is a fraud. I mean, he, first of all, let's just hope that we could replace him. I don't like people talking about impeachment. That just isn't going to work. It's going to
backfire
on us. You don't
think so? And why?
Why? Because I don't think the Senate is not going to go along with it. So it's going to be a failed effort. So why put all that effort, that energy into something that's not going to work? Let's focus on the things that really people really care about, like healthcare, like infrastructure, like jobs, like education. Let's get rid of Betty DeVos, who is trying to privatize public education. Those are the things we need to focus on. And I just hope that our colleagues in Washington will do that. Put impeachment aside. Let's talk about a democratic, progressive agenda. And we support the things that Donald Trump does not support.
Yeah, we're talking in a week where President Trump is announcing his reelection formally. Do you think he could win again?
Sure, of course. Did anybody think he could win the first time? He could win if Democrats are not united, if we don't pick a strong candidate, and if we don't really come behind in a unified fashion behind the person who was selected. So it's all we have to do. We have to find a good, strong candidate. Personally, if you want to know, I'm supporting Joe Biden.
Oh, okay, I did want to ask you about that.
I think he can win. I think he's got the experience. He's got the temperament. He's tough enough to stand up to Trump. There are other good people there, too. I've been very impressed lately with Elizabeth Warren. She's got some very good ideas, and she does a good job in expressing them. So we've got some good people, and once we decide who will be the front runner, we've just got to get behind him or her and stay united and stay focused on the issues that people care about.
So in addition to the political world, you've also had some private sector experience. You mentioned Citibank.
Citibank, I was a director of the New York Stock Exchange. I was a corporate director of about 9 different corporations. That was a very good experience, too.
So I'm wondering, what do you think about the Democratic Socialist, Bernie Sanders, the famous AOC? Well, they call themselves that, right?
Yeah. I don't quite understand it. I mean, either you're a Democrat or you're not. Bernie Sanders has tried to explain this Democratic Socialism. I guess it works for him, but I don't really think it's something that most people really relate to. It doesn't resonate with most people. Look, if you're a Democrat, just talk about the enduring democratic values that we've had that have made such a difference in this country.
Are they going too far to the left, do you think?
I think
because it sounds like some of the policies you mentioned, you agree with them.
I agree with them.
Yeah.
I think they're putting the wrong label on them. I agree with most of what they want to do. So let's come together and just say we're Democrats and these are things that have worked for us since the New Deal. And things like providing jobs for people, providing quality education, affordable education, good health care. These are things that people care about, and these are things that Democrats have always supported.
Now, you've been a prominent African-American figure for decades.
Yes.
There's been a lot of progress in your lifetime,
also
a lot of setbacks. Where do you think things stand now?
At the state level, I think we're doing very well. You know, you've got an African-American head of the assembly. You've got an African-American female who is the majority leader in the Senate. We've got an African-American attorney general. I mean, I think what we have now is people who have taken advantage of other people who have come before them and have shown, you know, when I ran, the fact that no African-American had held a statewide office. I held a statewide office. I think I performed well enough so people felt that, you know, why not? You know, I think that opened the door for others. And the people we have here now will provide an opportunity and open the doors for people who will come behind them.
Well, what about governor? When do you think that is going to happen?
It could happen. I think it could happen. If we can elect a comptroller and if we can elect an attorney general, I think we can elect a governor. But right now, I think the fact that we might not have a governor, but we have someone who heads both branches of the legislature, so they, in a way, are as important as the governor in terms of getting things done here in Albany. I wish we were doing better in the city in terms of minority representation. I don't think we're doing as well there. And of course, at the national level, there are some bright spots. Hakeem Jeffries, who is now the number 4 Democrat in the House, a very promising young man. But, you know, we've got a way to go in Washington.
Okay, last question. We're talking to you because you're leaving the SUNY Board of Trustees. You're retiring now,
Retiring,
you're
going to
sit back and relax and just enjoy your life.
For a couple of weeks.
I know. I'm being a bit facetious. I know that you probably are not the kind to sit back.
That's right. I might do something else. I've thought about teaching a course. I've talked to the folks at the University of Albany who encouraged me to do that. And I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book, a memoir. I'm going to talk about my 50 plus years in public service, what I've learned, what mistakes I've made, what kind of advice I have for other people. And I'm going to tell some stories about what it's been like to be in public life, what it's like to be even my private life in terms of my relationship with my family, what that's meant to me. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, that sounds great. I look forward to reading it. Okay. And thanks for stopping by to talk to us.
Thanks for having me here, Karen. Thanks for all you do in terms of informing the public about the interesting things and sometimes the not so interesting things that happen here in Albany.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, back at the news desk, some news there. He's going to be writing a book, one that a lot of journalists and politicians here in Albany will want.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great, and it's a great collaboration with Paul Grondahl, who's won awards for his writing. Mm-hmm. It'll help him with maybe some of the finer points of telling his story in the best way. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Right, looking forward to that, and that will do it for us this week. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio.
We end the show today with footage from Canal Side in the city of Buffalo. Just this week, ranked number 19 on People Magazine's list of 100 reasons to love America. Thanks for watching, everyone. We'll see you next time right here on New York Now.